The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
A controversy over Pride Month products is causing headaches for retail giant Target. It says safety is behind its decision to halt some sales.
Citing threats to employees, the company says, given these volatile circumstances, we are making adjustments to our plans, including removing items that have been at the center of the most significant confrontational behavior. The retailer removing LGBTQ brand Aproulin from their stores and website, whose products featured satanic themes. Target also reportedly reviewing its adult collection of tuck-friendly swimsuits that allows trans people who have not had gender-affirming operations to conceal their private parts.
The misinformation here was that kids were being targeted with this stuff. They realized if they can threaten enough people, if they can scare enough people in real-life locations, that maybe support for the LGBTQ community will diminish among corporations.
Target is hardly the only corporation under attack.
I think there's this really small group who has an outsized voice at this moment in time, and it's of hate, and it's of hate discrimination, and it's violent.
A few of the products were the subject of a ton of misinformation and misleading claims on social media. California Governor Gavin Newsom called out Target CEO Brian Cornell, said he was selling out to extremists.
If you're Target and you cave here, this is a slippery slope, because this anti-LGBTQ movement, they're not going to stop here. They want to sue every company out there that has any sort of diversity and inclusion initiative.
Yeah, I think there's something really quite scary here.
That tells you the depth to which the right wing is willing to sink in order to erase entire communities from society. You know, free market capitalism until a company sells a rainbow T-shirt. And then they resort to threats of violence and intimidation. These are not rational people engaging in meaningful conversations. And there is a real danger that allowing these bullies to have their way, that telling them that threats of violence, things we've seen them explode into violence across the country before.
You do not have a right to tell other kids they can't read this book about this. They can't talk about their gay parents. They can't buy that shirt at Target. That's not a conservative position. It's frankly like a very totalitarian position.
Case, when Target caves into this, then it says that the moment you threaten the employees of even a very large corporation, you get to control its policies. This is economic terrorism, literally terrorism.
Literally, wow, literally terrorism. People have decided not to shop at Target because of what they're selling. And this is the way the regime media covers the story. They don't talk about how that Target's lost $10 billion because of its stocks plummeting. That's the story here. But here's the regime media, like they did with January 6th and so many other hot button issues. They see the boogeyman. They see the violence. They see the terrorism. And all America is doing is saying, thank you very much. We'll not shop at Target anymore. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live stream of this show at trumpetdaily.com, or you can go over to our Rumble channel. That's the Trumpet Daily at Rumble, and you can join our growing audience at either of those platforms. Lots to get to on today's show. This is from the New York Post. Target has lost $10 billion in market valuation over the last 10 days as the popular retailer continues to face backlash over its pride-themed clothing line for children. You might have seen in that opening montage the T-shirt that says Satan, you know, he believes in all of the different genders. Satan? This is what Target's promoting? I mean, it's right there in those reports. And people find out about it and say, I don't want to go to Target. It's the same with Bud Light. I don't want to buy. Have you seen the pictures of the beer sections of grocery stores where there's just all of this Bud Light and everything else is sold out for Memorial Day weekend? people have decided. They've boycotted these companies that have gone woke. And there's the regime media, of course, defending the companies. They hate America so much. They hate you so much that for not shopping at Target, they're willing to call you terrorists. It's unbelievable. These people, they've lost their minds. All that matters to them is, well, on the one hand, get Trump and then go woke. Well, they're going woke, and as the saying goes, they're going broke as well. This New York Times or Post piece, it says, the nearly 14% drop in value for the blue chip stock roughly translates to a $10 billion loss in valuation. A $10 billion loss. It says the plummet stands as the retailer's lowest stock price in nearly 3 years. So they sell the T-shirts that have Satan emblazoned on them, and now they're suffering as a result. You look out. Last week I got into the sickness that there is in Israel and the way God views it. These abominations, Ezekiel 8, Ezekiel 24. We went through those passages last week, and we'll continue on with that study here in just a moment. But first, listen, switching gears a little bit to the Biden crime family. Speaking of sickness, listen to what Maria Bartiromo had to say on this deadline for Chris Wray to hand over the Biden document. I guess that comes up at the end of today. He still refuses. Jim Comer and the Republicans on the committee, they know what's in the document. They know what the essence of it is. Obviously, Chris Wray knows all about it, but he won't hand it over. He doesn't want any oversight, any congressional oversight. He just wants to run the FBI the way he sees fit. Here's the clip two.
These are the most serious allegations against a sitting president ever. I don't think we've ever had such allegations of influence peddling. Bank records indicating the Biden family accepted money from China. Our number one adversary, and the mainstream media will not cover it.
Yeah, isn't that just appalling? And by the way, this accusation and this whistleblower, I believe, goes back to before the election. So it's yet another accusation that could have derailed Joe Biden's election. But what we know is not only mainstream media, obviously, but also our law enforcement agencies were working to elect Joe Biden. I mean, you have to kind of step back and say, this is banana republic stuff, Maria. This is not what is supposed to happen in the United States. We know this document exists. They know it exists. So all this stuff about how it could upset an ongoing investigation. What ongoing investigation? That's what we hear about the looking into Hunter Biden's laptop. Ongoing investigation for 5 years.
The media, they won't even cover this. They're too busy. They're too busy telling you that you're a terrorist because you won't shop at Target. This is from the New York Post as well. It says in 2018, Hunter Biden's world was collapsing. The New York Times had run a story on one of his shady deals with the Chinese, and his father, then vice president, was pulled into the vortex. It says it appears that Hunter was in a free fall, and his uncle, Jim Biden, reached out in newly discovered messages to offer him a safe harbor. It says here, the exchange is an insight into the train wreck of the life of this scion of one of the most powerful families in the country. It says, however, it's also insight into a world of influence peddling where millions of dollars simply evaporated into the coffers of the Biden family. I was going to say the Biden crime family. I'll insert that. It says here, as Biden associates pushed the Times to change aspects of the story, Joe Biden called to report on the results. It says in his message, Biden ends his call to Hunter with the statement, I think you're clear. I mean, even the New York Times is getting into it. And Joe Biden calls his son and says, hey, I think the story's going to be okay. I think you're in the clear. Says, and anyway, if you get a chance, give me a call. I love you. That's quoting Joe Biden. The new messages indicate that the Bidens were worried that Hunter was in a free fall as these dealings were becoming known and revenue was declining. It's amazing what's being revealed, even in just the past few weeks. And yet, as Maria points out correctly, you know, the regime media, they won't even cover it still. I mean, they admitted, half-heartedly anyway, a few months ago, or maybe last year, I forget when it was exactly, 18 months after the fact that Hunter's laptop was legit. It actually was Hunter's. And yet, where have been the stories about what's on the laptop? Or the stories about the crimes of the Biden family? All of this influence peddling. Listen to Judge Jeanine. This was on Fox, I believe, recently, again, about this FBI document that Chris Wray refuses to turn over. Basically, a document that proves that Biden was engaged in a bribery scheme. Unbelievable. Clip 3.
The amazing part of this is that the FBI, the same crew who took an unverified document, took it to a court to violate someone's Fourth Amendment rights to spy on a president, which unverified document they knew was a lie. And now they're saying they don't want to hand over a whistleblower's document because it's unverified. I mean, it doesn't get any richer than this. Mm-hmm. And for them to say we're not going to hand it over, they've admitted, number one, that they have something, and number two, that it's not classified. I don't want to see this thing get classified.
They won't hand it over. This is the same institution that, as she points out there, that waltzed into the FISA court with no evidence and said, hey, judge, we've got all this evidence that Donald Trump is compromised. Now, all of a sudden, well, we can't turn it over because we're so upright. We're so righteous. We've got to protect our sources and methods. That's the position that Chris Wray takes now. Listen again to Judge Jeanine as she goes back to where or when this what we're seeing is a fundamental transformation. She goes back to when this actually started. Clip 4.
If we don't straighten out the ship soon, that we're going to end up being the socialist nation that a lot of these people want America to be. I mean, it started with Barack Obama, and I talk about this. Joe Biden comes in and the Trojan horse. I'm a moderate, but all of the leftist, socialist, Marxist mentality is filtering through in all the agencies throughout America.
It all started with Barack Obama. Isn't that interesting? Again, this is all brought out. In America Under Attack, if you don't have this book, make sure you call our operators today and add this to your library. Make this a centerpiece in your library. There's no cost, no obligation. Just call 1-866-930-3024 and request America Under Attack. I hadn't checked my mail in a few days because we were out of town, but I picked it up yesterday, the mailbox, and there they were, two books. One for me and my wife, one for my daughter, who's still living in our home. So, yeah, you can get yours sent to you as well. America Under Attack. Let me just go through, again, a little bit of this history. Judge Jeanine referred to it there, going back to Barack Obama, 2008. This is from Conservative Treehouse. Sundance says, why and how did traditional liberalism go suddenly flip from being big picture anti-government to suddenly embracing corrupt government enterprise and supporting the intelligence apparatus, federal government writ large, institutional oppressive law enforcement and FBI, etc.? What happened? I mean, it used to be that the media, they were the watchdogs. It used to be that the media would not trust what was coming out from the FBI and the DOJ. Now they cover for them. Now they cover for Chris Wray. What happened? It says here, in the 50 years that preceded 2008, traditional leftists, media activists, left-wing community organizing agencies, Democrats, liberals, progressives, or whatever label you want to assign, essentially railed against the U.S. government and all that it represented. For 50 years, this was the case. It says, however, now, if you were to look at the issues from the 30,000-foot perspective, those same groups currently support the oppressive and weaponized system of government they formerly despised. It says in the 50 years that preceded 2008, those same groups had an approach of distrust toward the government, the media, and so on. Further on, Sundance says, in 2008, the activists took control of government. That's what happened with the emergence of Barack Obama. In 2008, the activists took control. The activists took over. And you could say the activists gained control of the media as well, the regime media, because they all speak the same thing. It says here, in January of 2009, the leftist community organizers and activists took control of the systems they had opposed for the preceding 50 years. It says, in January of 2009, again, this is when Barack Obama came to power, the inflection point took place, an inflection point that no one realized in forethought, scale, or consequence. It says, starting in 2009, all the systems of federal government were now under the control of the people who previously fought against the systems of federal government. Everything since is an outcome of that inflection point. That's why it says everything flipped. This is Sundance saying what few others are willing to say. Again, you can read all about it in America Under Attack. He says, all of it, and I do mean every scintilla of the thing, every single granular detail and example you can put in front of me can be traced back to the moment when the activists were no longer outside government railing against the corrupt system they hated. It all goes back to 2008, 2009, and only at the trumpet, when everyone else was embracing Barack Obama as the man that would somehow heal the country, that would heal the racial divide in the United States, only at thetrumpet.com did you get the truth. In addition to AUA, by the way, make sure you subscribe to The Trumpet magazine if you'd like to know and receive tomorrow's headlines today. We give out free one-year subscriptions to The Trumpet magazine. Just call our operators, 1-866-930-3024. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
I don't agree with the conventional wisdom about Ron DeSantis. I think right now he's even money. And I know a lot of people would laugh at that. I think Ron DeSantis right now is even money to be the next Republican nominee for president. I do think that if he learns how to get out of his way, and we're still, 9 months off
from
elections, he could beat Donald Trump, because he is so much more competent than Donald Trump, and he's supposed to come without the baggage that Donald Trump has. As he said in his press conference, he doesn't know a whole lot about paying off porn stars, so he can't really answer those type of questions. There could be a great contrast.
Ron DeSantis there, receiving the all-important endorsement from Joe Scarborough. I can't imagine that his camp is too excited about that. But there you go. We talked, of course, about the disastrous rollout of the DeSantis for President campaign last week. I meant to get to this particular clip from Megyn Kelly as she responded. This is from last week, her talking about all the glitches with Twitter Space, I think it was called, when he tried to announce his run for the presidency, and he was something like 20 or 25 minutes late, and well, you know the story. Here's Megyn Kelly, clip 10.
Ron DeSantis launched his presidential campaign last night in what the kids might call an epic fail. It was embarrassing and awkward and had the bewildering, unsteadying feel of a disaster unfolding before your very eyes. You can't look away, and yet you're viscerally uncomfortable watching it, too. How on earth were the kinks not worked out beforehand? Some 600,000 people tried logging on to watch, a considerable feat given that most of us had never been on Twitter Spaces, including journalists like me, only to be met with messages like, "This space is not available," and "This space has ended," all before it had even begun. Not a good omen, and certainly not the messaging a campaign wants on launch night.
We're still waiting for, maybe they're already out. I just haven't looked through the news closely enough, but still waiting for the latest polls on Trump versus DeSantis, on Trump versus Biden, and DeSantis versus Biden. But as we noted last week, Donald Trump is way out in front. But Joe Scarborough believes Team DeSantis has a pretty good shot. You might have seen over the weekend, too, this Texas legislature that went after the very popular Attorney General, Ken Paxton. He was the one, I think the reason this story stood out to me is he was the one that basically at that Heritage Foundation event a month or two ago, he got up and said, "This is how we stopped election fraud from happening in Texas. We prevented them from just indiscriminately mailing out all of these ballots, mail-in ballots. We put a stop to it before the election, and that's how Texas stayed red, basically." Well, here's the Texas legislature going after Ken Paxton. It says the Texas House voted Saturday to impeach Republican Attorney General Ken Paxton, 121-23. Oh, it's overwhelming. I mean, this is a Republican-led state legislature. It says, under the Texas Constitution, Paxton will have to step aside temporarily as the process plays out. It says the Senate will now take up the matter. Further on, Paxton is under investigation by the FBI for allegedly misusing his office to assist a donor. Of course, the FBI is going to go after him. Of course, the FBI is going to investigate him. They're not going to investigate Hunter's laptop. For sure, no. But Paxton, yeah, he's got to be investigated. He becomes a target. If you talk about the election steal, then you become a target. That's the way that this works. It says here, the articles of impeachment brought forward by the lawmakers accused Paxton, of engaging in bribery and unlawful conduct. Can you believe this? Of all that the Biden crime family has gotten away with, the bribery scheme, Chris Ray's sitting on a document that reveals it, that shows it. And they're going to try to get Paxton on bribery, if you can believe it. Sundance has this to say about just how many Republicans joined on. And of course, this provoked Donald Trump to respond by saying, "We're going to get those rhinos out of the Texas state legislature." But Sundance says, "People are shocked when I share the opinion that Texas is not near the top of the Republican states considered deep red conservative or freedom values based. Of the mostly visible 30 states you might consider conservative or freedom balance, Texas wouldn't appear in the top five. Today's vote in the Texas State House is just another data point in that direction. So this is Sundance saying, you know, there's a lot of rhinos in the Texas state government. The Texas Republicans who voted to remove the conservative AG are the typical Texas rhino, Bush, and DeSantis support group. Understanding the dynamic, President Trump has promised to fight the Texas Republicans as they attack Ken Paxton. So you'll remember, I mean, we talked about this heritage speech that he gave, and Paxton, he laid it all out there. He knew what was happening before the 2020 election. He called Donald Trump and tried to warn him and tried to say, look, if they're doing this in Houston and Austin and San Antonio, those counties with those big cities, then they're surely doing this in other swing states or big swing states that are going to basically move the election, you know, one direction or the other. And he turned out to be right. Paxton went to court. He had like 12 lawsuits going before the 2020 election to prevent the communists from completing the steal. They would have turned Texas. They would have turned Texas blue if not for this man. So obviously, the FBI has got to go after him for sure because he's a conservative. I think I paraphrased or went through some of this last week. Maybe it was Friday's show from the hotel room, but we talked about the operation to get Trump for moving boxes. They're going after Paxton for bribery. Trump, hey, they're going to get him just for moving a few boxes around. It says two of Donald Trump's employees moved boxes of papers the day before an early June visit by FBI agents. They moved boxes of papers. This is a direct quote from the Washington Post. They moved boxes of papers. It says Trump and his aides also allegedly carried out a dress rehearsal, allegedly, for moving sensitive papers even before his office received the May 2022 subpoena. It says, listen to CNN as they reported on this last week. This big expose in the Washington Post, clip 8.
The Washington Post with significant new reporting this hour. Two of Trump's Mar-a-Lago employees moved boxes of documents at the residence, Trump's residence, just one day before the FBI and a prosecutor visited his home to retrieve classified documents. So just let me give you a sense of the timeline here. This was in June 2022. It was after a subpoena had been issued, right? And then it was the day before the FBI was scheduled to come get documents. Sources familiar with the matter telling the Washington Post that investigators believe that that timing is suspicious and a sign of possible obstruction.
Wow. One day before they were moving some boxes around at Mar-a-Lago? That's significant as far as seeing it. These are the same people telling you that there's all these terrorist acts going on against, I guess, Target employees or people that represent Bud Light. They're terrorists for simply boycotting those companies. Listen to this commentary in response to the case of the moving boxes, clip 9.
So it doesn't look very good for Donald Trump. Again, if all this evidence is mounting and Jack Smith is a special counsel of the highest integrity with a dogged determination to find the truth in this matter.
And so, there is this disconnect. I completely agree with Director Brennan that he, you know, in no way, shape or form was a student of any of the sort of national security process of the United States of America. And consequently, I think as an intelligence professional.
Brennan and Strzok, these are the two. Not just proponents, the two big proponents of Russiagate, the Russiagate hoax. They were the ones that led the way. John Brennan and Peter Strzok. And now there they are. There they are to say that the walls are closing in on Donald Trump. You can't make this up. Just craziness. Craziness that passes for news commentary every day on these networks. The regime media, that's all that it is. I guess yesterday, or maybe it was over the weekend, Kevin McCarthy, he came to terms of agreement with Joe Obama, actually, on the debt ceiling, raising the debt ceiling for $4 trillion more to be added to the national debt. He compromised. He gave in. This is from Miranda Devine. She says, Kevin McCarthy trumpeted a debt ceiling deal Sunday, but increasing debt another $4 trillion with minimal concessions is nothing to boast about. But McCarthy's one deal breaker should have been his promise to defund President Biden's massive $80 billion to turbocharge an already weaponized IRS. He couldn't even get that removed. Maybe it's delayed for a year. Who knows how it'll play out, I guess, next year. But Obama wants that 80 or 90,000 IRS agents added to the mix so that he can carry out more persecution against political opponents. It's already been weaponized, as Miranda Devine says. What a compromise for McCarthy. I mean, even when they settled on him back in January, you had to know that this point was coming eventually, because he's proven himself to be a rhino through and through. Listen to this commentary on Fox News, clip 5.
The fight in January with Kevin McCarthy was that he would fight for conservatism. It was his words that said debt is the single biggest threat to America. Not only did he not fight, he surrendered the details of our bill. And so the only people that are happy with this bill, only factions that are happy, are China, which is buying up more of our debt, and the Biden administration, which we're now seeing is a corrupt administration that will spin this country into oblivion.
That's Ralph Norman. This is back to Devine's article. She says, in the debt ceiling deal outlined Sunday and due to be inked later this week, McCarthy has allowed the lion's share of that extra IRS funding to remain unmolested, preserving $78 billion of the $80 billion, as rebel GOP rep Dan Bishop put it, so there will be 85,260 more IRS agents rather than 87,000 to eat you alive. That's a big win, he says sarcastically. Instead of 87,000 new IRS agents, you've got 85,000. Because we were able to reach a deal. We were able to put something together that's truly bipartisan. Listen again to Norman on Fox News, clip 6.
And there is a time that you walk away from negotiations, and this is one of them. They're not serious. Biden dithered for over 100 days, and no deal is better than a bad deal. And this is a bad deal for America, and it should not move forward. But we'll see how we're all coming back today, and we'll see if it, what concessions, or if they can get back to some semblance of what the intentions of the bill was. That was the whole fight, whole thing with McCarthy. He was supposed to fight for conservatism. He surrendered, and we're not going to accept that.
He's, as you see there, he's a Republican from South Carolina. Instead of fighting, and it's amazing to me, he had all the leverage, and instead of fighting, he surrendered. Another good Republican, unwilling to fight, showing no courage or faith in a cause. Just surrender away to Barack Hussein Obama. This is an interesting piece here from, speaking of rhinos, but still, every once in a while, Andy McCarthy does have some decent content. But he says here, the Supreme Court's clipping of DOJ's wings should spare Trump a January 6 indictment. It's interesting when you think of it in terms of the, you know, the kingdom's court over in Amos chapter 7. Again, all that's discussed, fleshed out in America Under Attack. If you don't have this book, make sure you call our operators and request your free copy today, 1-866-930-3024. McCarthy says here, on October 3rd, Trump and his adult children faced the start of a major civil fraud trial brought by New York Attorney General Letitia James. Meantime, a state judge in Manhattan has set a March 25, 2024 date as the commencement date for Trump's criminal trial on charges brought by District Attorney Alvin Bragg. So McCarthy is opening this piece by talking about all of these indictments, these lawsuits coming at Trump and the Trump family from every angle. He says further on, there isn't much good news on those and other legal fronts for the former president, except that is for the ray of sunshine he indirectly got earlier this month when the Supreme Court threw out fraud and corruption convictions against two cronies of New York's disgraced former governor Andrew Cuomo. It says the rulings issued the same day in the closely related cases of Joseph Percoco and Luis Simonelli make it significantly less likely that Trump will be indicted in connection with the event that Democrats most want him charged over, the January 6th Capitol riot that capped off his condemnable attempts to prevent, this is McCarthy's take, to prevent Congress from ratifying now President Joe Biden's Electoral College victory. From there, this article gets into a lot of the technical detail with respect to that ruling in the federal court, or that ruling in the Supreme Court. But he's basically showing how that because of this ruling, it really does establish some favorable precedent for what might could happen with respect to Trump over January 6th and that Jack Smith investigation. They're just trying to get him on anything, moving the boxes. McCarthy says here, on that score, the court is cracking down on vagueness. There is not a consensus among even conservative justices about how extensive the crackdown must be. Most would narrow vague statutes to a heartland of patently criminal conduct. Let me just skip down further on. It says this is bad news for, again, I'll skip over some of the technical stuff. Maybe you can track down the article if you'd like to read it yourself. But it says this is bad news for January 6th prosecutions that aggressively employ the aforementioned obstruction statute. Further on, it says violent conduct and that prevents Congress from convening or traditional obstruction crimes such as witness intimidation and document tampering are obviously corrupt, but hyper-aggressive prosecutors could potentially stretch the concept to cover such First Amendment-protected activities as heated political speech, raucous but nonviolent assembly, or even lobbying. So, I mean, if it's violent, okay, but if it's just people expressing their opinions, giving their voice, exercising their First Amendment rights, you know, if there's an overreach there and the Supreme Court comes along and smacks it down, this could be good news for Trump and even Trump's supporters. Notice this from the Associated Press. January 6th rioters are raking in thousands in donations. Now the U.S. is coming after their haul. So some of these January, who really don't have the resources to defend themselves, they're setting up a GoFundMe, I guess the conservative version of that, to receive funding and support. And if you can believe it, and I know you can, the DOJ is actually going after that money because they don't want these January 6th protesters to have any resources whatsoever. They just want to throw them behind bars and leave them there, languishing until death. Says the Justice Department now wants Goodwin to give up more than $25,000 that he raised, a clawback that is part of a growing effort by the government to prevent rioters from being able to personally profit from participating in the attack that shook the foundations of American democracy. Yeah, it really shook the foundation of America, those protests on January 6th. Here comes the DOJ. You know, they're there to protect America. They're there to protect Americans. That's what they say. And here they come after even the money that one of these January 6th protesters raised, $25,000, that he's probably just going to give to his lawyers to represent him. But Merrick Garland can't stand for this. No, no. These are terrorists, and they should not get funding whatsoever. Says most of the fundraising efforts appear on GiveSendGo, which bills itself as the number one free Christian fundraising site and has become a haven for January 6th defendants, barred from using mainstream crowdfunding sites, including GoFundMe, to raise money. It says the rioters often proclaim their innocence and portray themselves as victims of government oppression. How dare they proclaim their innocence? I mean, as far as the Associated Press is concerned, they're guilty. They're violent insurrectionists. So they got to go after Give, Send, Go. Every single service like this, it's got to be just like GoFundMe, you know, radical to the left, just like Target, just like Bud Light. That's what's normal now. Just accept it. says their fundraising success suggests that many people in the United States still view January 6 rioters as patriots and cling to the baseless belief that Democrats stole the 2020 presidential election from Donald Trump. They're so sensitive on this subject. How dare people still believe this? How dare people think that the election was stolen? We've got to go after them and their funding. This is some sick stuff, for sure. You talk about the sickness within. Isaiah 1 speaks to that. I think I mentioned Ezekiel 8 last week on the show. Let me just read this verse again. It says in verse 17, Ezekiel 8, verse 17, "Then he said unto me, have you seen this, O son of man? Is it a light thing to the house of Judah that they commit the abominations which they commit here? For they have filled the land with violence and have returned to provoke me to anger. And lo, they put the branch to their nose." We went through this. Remember, it's as if these people, these lawless individuals, are just waving or shoving a branch right in the nose of God, God himself. And this is what God thinks of their sin. God is exposing them. And of course, they hate being exposed, which makes them all the more wrathful, all the more filled with hatred and rage. When we come back, we'll continue on with a few quotes from the Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet booklet, and also continue on with this study about how God views our wickedness and our sins. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
If you don't have a copy of Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet, again, make sure you call our operators. We offer all of our literature without cost, no obligation. You just need to send us your email address or rather your street address so that we can mail the hard copy to you. Of course, you can get to all of our literature at our website, thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com and look under the library tab at thetrumpet.com, and you can get to Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet. Here's a quote from that booklet. It says, "If you think God doesn't have an opinion about what is happening in Israel, listen to these words. I don't know how anyone who claims to follow God can read these words and not be afraid. He's talking about a despicable people and explaining why the tribulation and the day of the Lord. God cannot lie. He prophesied this, and he will fulfill it. No one will stop him. All Israel will crumble before him when these prophecies are fulfilled." He's talking about Ezekiel 8, verse 17. He's talking about the prophecies in Ezekiel 8, in Ezekiel 24, and elsewhere. what your Bible says about what's coming. Let's shift over to Habakkuk. This is Habakkuk 2, verse 15. It says, "Woe unto him that gives his neighbor drink, that puts your bottle to him, that makes him drunk also, that you may look on their nakedness." Verse 16 says, "You are filled with shame for glory. Drink you also, and let your foreskin be uncovered." Some pretty graphic language here. "The cup of the Lord's right hand shall be turned unto you, and shameful spewing shall be on your glory." Listen to what my father says or writes here in the Habakkuk booklet. It says, "You are filled with shame." Well, he quotes verse 16 about the nakedness being uncovered, exposed, fully exposed. It says, "Do you want to lose your glory? Some of God's people are getting into the worst kind of shame. What glory they had, and now what shame. God will uncover the foreskin of this filthy, Satan-led spiritual pervert." That means his putrid spiritual life is going to be exposed. This is a very ugly portrayal. It certainly is. It's not like it's a subject that we just enjoy talking about. But look, we saw these spiritual abominations happening in God's church. Back in the late 1980s, the early 1990s, we saw it led to destruction, total destruction of God's work. And God had to raise up another work. He had to raise up the ruins. And now we're seeing this play out on a national scale. And God is going to expose all of this evil, all of this filth, all of these impurities. It's graphic imagery, as I say. God's focusing in on the sin of an Antiochus type. He's telling you, look, come along, to go back to Ezekiel 8. He's saying, look, come along, come look at it again, and you'll see that the abominations are even worse than you imagined, worse than you realized. Isaiah 1, verses 5 and 6, that's the passage that speaks of the sickness that goes from head to toe, and we've concentrated on this in recent programs, the fact that we're faint of heart, that you just don't have a willingness to fight, as I said in the last segment. People are just too inclined to surrender, to capitulate. Isaiah 1 and verse 5, it says, "Why should you be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick. The whole heart is faint." It says in verse 6, "From the sole of the foot even unto the head, there's no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment." You see, this is what our nations are like. Putrefying sores, it says. They have not been closed. Strong's Concordance says about that, to be moist, properly dripping, hence fresh. Just fresh wounds, in other words. Wide open wounds. They haven't been tended to. They're just right out there in the open. These wounds, this sickness, it's killing our nation. It's killing our nations, plural. The nations of Israel, Ephraim, Manasseh, little Judah, U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. Add this one to your library with AUA. Really, if you read this, study this first, and then supplement it with America Under Attack, I mean, you'll be brought right up to speed with respect to Bible prophecy as it pertains to the United States and Britain. Let me read to you one more passage. This is Lamentations, chapter 1 and verse 8. It says, "Jerusalem has grievously sinned, therefore she is removed. All that honored her despise her, because they have seen her nakedness. Yea, she sighs and turns backward." Verse 9 says, "Her filthiness is in her skirts. She remembers not her last end. Therefore she came down wonderfully. She had no comforter. O Lord, behold my affliction, for the enemy has magnified himself." Moffat translation says of verse 9, "Her filth clung to her skirts. She was a fetid rag. She never thought of what would follow, and so her fall was tragic. So she has this stench about her as well. And the impurities just ground into her garments. They can't even be washed out. It's that deep-seated. It's that putrid. She's about to fall. The Lamentations booklet. This is Lamentations, the point of no return. It says, as you read this chapter, you can begin to feel the mental anguish of the people. They struggle with the question, why is all this happening to us? And God begins to show them in verse 9. We just read verse 9 to you. This is why God brings all of these curses upon us. This is why the great tribulation and the day of the Lord. This is why God allows our people to go along into captivity. Her filthiness is in her skirts. The sin is so great, God says, that the filth has just been ground into the cloth that we adorn ourselves with. The garments, they're far from righteous garments, described in Revelation 19. The righteous garments that the bride of Christ will be wearing. But you look at the garments that people are putting on today. This verse says, she remembers not her last end. Therefore, she came down wonderfully, and she had no comforter. As I say, any of our material, we've got the Lamentations booklet. I've given you a quote from the Ezekiel booklet. I've referred to the U.S. and Britain in prophecy, also America Under Attack. All of our literature is offered without cost or obligation. Just call our operators today. That's 1-866-930-3024. Also, you can email the show with some feedback if you like. That address is td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show as we wrap up a couple of minutes early, but that's okay. We can do that from time to time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is The Trumpet Daily, and we'll see you next time.